So my mother has been involved with music really since before she was born. Her family came from Ukraine. And in fact, I have a violin that belonged to her grandfather, my great-grandfather, that he used in Ukraine. And it was from the 1800s. So when she was young, she studied the violin. She became a violinist. And she even played violin duets with Mike Wallace of CBS fame, whose son Chris is still on TV doing the news shows and things like that. And so when they were 10 years old, they actually played violin duets, Mike Wallace and my mother. And it wasn't until after that that she decided to change to piano. And so she was already a teenager, which is late for someone who might want to become a concert pianist to do something like that. Well, she didn't know yet that that was something she might wind up doing. But she would tell me these stories over and over again about her years growing up with Leonard Bernstein and playing with orchestra before Bernstein did, and his being jealous of her. And I finally got her to start writing a book, and she did, and the book is called My Friend Lenny, a memoir of my life in music. And of course it tells more than just her experiences with Bernstein, but lots of other things. And so here's an excerpt from that book, and we'll talk about some other things that happened later, but this is a chapter about playing concertos with a conductor that was named Alexandra Tita. My mother, her name is Pauline Louise, but everyone called her Wita. And so that comes into play later on, the rhyme between Wita and Tita, you'll see. One Sunday afternoon, this is my mother writing, my mom heard the State Symphony Orchestra concert at the Brookline Shell under Alexandra Tita, a young, talented conductor. At the end of the concert, she went up to Mr. Tita and told him that she had a talented 16-year-old daughter, me, who would love to play the Mendelssohn Concerto in C minor with him. Upon hearing that Gebhardt was my teacher, he was considered, of course, the best teacher in Boston, he asked my mom to have him write a note about my qualities, and then he would set up an audition in Gebhardt's house using his second grand piano for the orchestra part. 2 weeks later, the day arrived for the big audition. I was so nervous because this was my first opportunity to play a concerto with orchestra under a fine conductor. When I first started to play, I noticed my fingers were trembling a bit from the excitement of the moment. Fortunately, I came through with flying colors, and Tita accepted me. Gebhardt was determined to get me into perfect shape for the scheduled concert and gave me many extra lessons to prepare me. The concert took place in a tremendous hall, Nevins Memorial in Framingham, Massachusetts. My sister Jo was backstage to comfort me with her moral support. Before I went on stage, I peeked out to see how the concert grand was placed. When I suggested to Mr. Tita that the piano should be turned more toward the audience, he answered me by saying, "Young lady, I don't care if that piano is on the ceiling. Your job is to go out and play it." I needed that tough attitude because I was so nervous that he literally had to push me onto the stage. As far as the audience was concerned, it was a fine performance. But in fact, at the end of the first movement, during the dozen or so measures of trilling with the orchestra, I accidentally left out two of them. To my surprise, Mr. Tita immediately conducted in double time so that the orchestra was with me in the next phrase. He warned me not to make that mistake again. The Framingham News said, "The soloist looked like a little girl in a long dress. She displayed a masterly technique." The applause was prolonged, and the young musician returned for several bows. Not bad for only 4 years of study. My mother had only been playing for 4 years, playing the piano at that point. I was booked to perform the concerto again at the same outdoor shell in Brookline at the Dean Road Park, where my mother had first heard Tita. Gebhardt was on vacation and not able to attend this performance, but his sister Peggy did, and she reported to Gebby. Here is his note, Gebhardt's note, from Bailey Island, Maine. My dear Wita, with heavenly joy, I read your letter and all of the programs and the postal card included. Congratulations on your big success. I even received a short letter from my sister, who told me even more, that the audience applauded tremendously at the end of the concerts, and that the orchestra applauded, and Mr. Petita immediately was immensely pleased. And you played wonderfully. You see, you were too modest in your account of your own performance. I am simply delighted that you deserve every bit of your success. It was lovely of you to write to me in such minute account of everything, including your suffering. But this was your first time, and it will be easier the next time. I am proud of you, and now at Dean Road, I want to be just as proud, and know I shall be. Here are best wishes for Tuesday night. I'll be with you in spirit, your teacher and friend, Heinrich Gebhardt. After I repeated my performance of the Mendelssohn G minor concerto, I received this letter from Gebhardt, and then he goes on to, you know, say some similar things. It was very charming of you and your family to ask Margaret and Marguerite for supper. I'm sure they enjoyed the evening with you very much. What have you thought out in connection with the lessons you were giving Margaret? Well, that's his daughter. See, my mother was actually teaching Gebhardt's daughter because the thought is it's very hard to teach your own child. Later on, she says, my mother continues on after this letter, I never expected to get a call from my conductor, Alexander Tita, one day asking him if I would like to play the Mendelssohn Concerto again, this time in the famous Jordan Hall at New England Conservatory of Music. I was very excited at this mention of this hall, where I had heard some of the greatest artists in the world, leader singers, string quartets, and pianists like Myra Hess. Myra Hess was maybe the greatest women pianist ever. And Jan Smetterlin, the Chopin specialist, as well as violinist Nathan Milstein. I remember what a thrill it was to meet Harold Bauer, the virtuoso pianist, to whom I was introduced by Gebhardt backstage after a concert. I even surprised myself when I suggested to Mr. Tita that I play the Beethoven Third Piano Concerto, which I was working on at the time, and would have a couple of months to master before the concert was scheduled. I felt that this would be a greater challenge to me, and Mr. Gebhardt fortunately agreed. It was wonderful to him because it meant that he would have to give me extra lessons, mostly at night, in which he played the orchestral part on the second piano. So I knew I would know where the piano entrances were and also become familiar with the orchestra part. But that wasn't all he did, of course. I had to go over and over the difficult passages and play them the way Gebhardt wanted me to play them and wanted them to sound. He always gave me the feeling that I had the ability to accomplish this without praising me too much. I had so little experience at the time. I was just 18 years old. It would be only the third time I played with orchestra in such a prestigious hall. I didn't feel I was ready for this with only one rehearsal. It was scary to know that the critics were poised to write down their honest opinions for the morning newspapers. I remember how I felt that day. That day I was to play. I thought, I don't have to do this. How easy it would be to just jump out of that third floor window and avoid all the turmoil going on in my brain. It was the most frightening thing I'd ever experienced. When I got in the hall, I thought, how am I going to do this? Would I be able to remember the entrances? It also helped to remember what Gebhardt once said to me. It may help you to relax if you think of the audience as a bunch of cabbage heads. Ashram. My mother once told me that he said to think of the audience as being in their underwear. As usual, my sister Jo was backstage to give me moral support, good old dependable Josie. Gebby and some of the top critics were in the audience. Leonard Bernstein, was backstage chanting, "Weed is gonna play with Tita, Weed is gonna play with Tita." He had never, up to then, experienced the thrill of playing with orchestra, so I expect he was a bit jealous. Even Harry Dick Ellis Dixon, my former violin teacher, who had turned me down at my audition for playing with his orchestra, was a violin soloist in the same series, Sweet Revenge. I walked shakily onto the tremendous stage with my taffeta fuchsia gown, gave a low bow with my head down, as I had been taught, and sat down at the 9-foot concert piano, grand piano. It seemed to me that the orchestra introduction to the concerto took an endless amount of time, but it was probably just 3 or 4 minutes. Just enough for me to survey my awesome surroundings, the audience, the orchestra, the conductor, all waiting to hear my opening notes. Before I knew it, I was sailing along and finally came to the cadenza, the solo part, where my playing was completely exposed with no orchestra to back me up. It was especially hard as I was playing without my glasses for the first time, something Gebhardt had suggested. Even though I had no need to read music, it was a pretty daring thing to do, as I had never tried it before. I think it might have helped me, as everything looked so hazy, and I guess it kept me from the reality of it all. At the moment of a performance, I was immersed in this masterpiece. It was almost like being in a hypnotic trance. My memory came through, and my fingers almost played by themselves all that I had been practicing for so many months. It's beforehand one that's nervous, but when I actually started playing, that feeling almost disappeared. I got carried away with the music and even forgot I was on stage in front of a large audience and several critics. About 100 instrumentalists in the orchestra depended upon me to inspire them to play their hearts out. When the first movement ended with loud cheers, the audience applauded, even though it usually is frowned upon. I had to stand up and bow in response. I always thought there was nothing wrong with applauding to express your feelings after an exciting first movement of a concerto, and Mr. Gebhardt felt the same way. The whole thing went fine and took about a half hour. When it was over, I was still in a daze. I couldn't believe I had played all those thousands of notes with all those interpretations, crescendos, diminuendos, pedal, and feeling that was demanded. Fortunately, the critics liked it too. The Boston Transcript reviewer wrote of my performance, Ouida Blatt, who is a soloist with the State Symphony Orchestra in Jordan Hall, playing the Beethoven Concerto in C minor, displayed an uncommonly good talent for proper pacing, and she succeeded through this ability in capturing the more delicate nuances, particularly in the largo, where her carefully executed pianissimos were outstanding. The Boston Globe had this to say. Miss Ouida Blatt was soloist in an ambitious and satisfying program. In the first and last movements, Mrs. Blatt performed with expertness. The orchestra's accompaniment was admirable. To Mr. Tita and Miss Blatt, an appreciative audience offered eloquent approval. I realize now that it took three people, at least, to make it possible for a young kid like me to accomplish a dream. My mom, who had asked a conductor named Alexander Tita to audition me, he had the guts to take a chance on an inexperienced young pianist, and my patient and dedicated teacher, Gebhardt. They made it all come through. After this tremendously emotional experience, one of the most important performances of my career so far, I couldn't help but ask myself the question, did I want to spend the rest of my life preparing for concerts and traveling all over the place with all the tension and stress it involves? Or did I want to be a normal person who settles down with the ideal husband and raises some adorable children who, of course, will be music lovers or perhaps even musicians? I'd have to think about that. And later on, she has a chapter about why she actually decided not to do that and to become a piano teacher, and she wound up teaching thousands of kids. Here's a section in which she talks about some of her experiences with Lenny Bernstein. She said, when we were still teenagers, Lenny and I tried out for a contest at Jordan Hall in Boston. The prize was a Mason and Hamlin grand piano. Before our turns to play, we were holding hands and shaking with anxiety. Lenny played his piece at the time, Malaguena, and I did the Chopin Scherzo in B-flat minor. Neither of us won the prize. Even now I remember the name of the winner, Edith Stern. She was a fine pianist and a good friend and went on to Boston University College of Music with me. And then they talked about another thing that they went to that was to identify records. The idea was to be able to recognize record excerpts from the classics, which were played for the audience. Lenny and I received high marks on the written answers and were eligible for a second and third parts, which took place at Boston Symphony Hall. Before the finals, I decided to bone up in the Boston Music Store in Boylston Street. I spent one whole day playing records and memorizing melodies. By this time, I had met my future husband, Samson Mintz. I wanted Sam to meet Lenny, so we invited him to and his sister, Shirley, for a day at Revere Beach, a Coney Island-type amusement park. Lenny gathered all the little kids he could find on the beach and played games such as London Bridge is Falling Down, which tells you a little bit about what Lenny was like even as a teenager. Then they went on a very high roller coaster. She got sick, and then Lenny decided to go back on it again, and he turned himself around in the seat and rode backwards for the new thrill. I found out later that roller coasters were a passion with him. While sitting on the beach, Lenny asked me to sing some melodies I had learned from my day in the music store. One that I hummed for him was the slow movement of Brahms' Violin Concerto, which he had never heard. So he never had heard the Brahms' Violin Concerto. Sure enough, it was one of the excerpts played in the finals. Lenny got it right. It was a quick trick question because it had a long orchestral introduction, and the solo violin didn't enter for 10 minutes. My research served me well. Also, our pictures were in the papers the next day. What is so ironic is that quite a few years later, I saw him conduct that same Brahms concerto with Yasha Heifetz, who was the greatest violinist of the day, and I think one of the greatest violinists ever. I placed high among the women and won several record albums. That's all she won. In those days, it was accepted to differentiate between the men and the women, as the feminist movement had not yet arrived. Lenny won second prize, which consisted of a trip to Tanglewood. Since he already had a scholarship to study there, they substituted an alternative prize to conduct a concert of the Boston Pops Orchestra at the Esplanade, replacing the conductor by Arthur Fiedler. This was his first experience conducting an orchestra. He got an ovation and he was elated. He had invited all of his friends he'd ever known to come to this big event and share his joy. It just occurred to me that I gave some impetus to his career when Sam and I took him to that concert, which led to his first conducting experience. Because I studied with Gebhard before Lenny did, I had the opportunity to play the Mendelssohn and the Violin Concerto with the State Orchestra under Tita. As a matter of fact, it wasn't long before he played with the same conductor and orchestra in Jordan Hall that I had done the year before. I played the Beethoven Third Concerto, and he played the Beethoven First later on. One afternoon at Tanglewood, while a few of us were sunning ourselves on the lake, Lenny, whose head was resting on my lap, looked up at me and said, "I have a problem. I can't decide whether to be a pianist or a conductor. If I made a career of being a pianist, I'd just be one of many. But if I were a conductor, I'd have a chance to study with Koussevitzky and become more important. Koussy wants me to change my name to Leonard S. Burns because he thinks I would be more successful with that name rather than Bernstein, which is too Jewish sounding." I knew Lenny was proud to be Jewish when he said, "I'll keep my name and become both a conductor and pianist. So that's some of the description of her early experiences as a teenager with Leni Bernstein. What's interesting is that over the years, we would go to hear him in various places. I once went with my mother to hear him in the city, and I can't remember whether it was Shostakovich or Stravinsky who was there. I wish I could remember. I can't remember which one it was. Playing or who was there with Bernstein. We also used to see him every year at Tanglewood, the summer home of the Boston Symphony Orchestra. And I remember going to his last concert. So this was at his 70th birthday party, and there were many, many people who had showed up to hear him there. He was not well. At one point, my mother said, "Oh, how have you been?" And he said, "Oh, Rita, I'm so sick." He said he'd been sick for 9 months. And I said to him, I had to think about whether I should ask him. And I said, "Well, do they tell you what it is? Do you know what it is?" And he said, "Oh, if they would only tell me." And so as we went back to our seats, my mother had tears in her eyes, and she said, that was a farewell. That was like a farewell. Well, I'll probably never see him again. And sure enough, 2 months later, he had died, and I wrote about some of the details of that experience in my mother's book.